Black, WNST.net, and Baltimore Positive. We are usually gathered together, but because of social distancing, former Baltimore County Executive Don Mohler and I are socially distanced right now. He is in Catonsville. I am downtown. We remain very, very Baltimore Positive. And strangely enough, Don, I had sort of begged out on Baltimore Positive this week. I thought I was going to be going to Toronto to see Pearl Jam on Wednesday night. There is no Pearl Jam. There is no tour. There is no baseball. There is no lacrosse. There is no basketball. There are no pool cards. Things have changed a lot since you and I were together with, Sheila Dixon 2 weeks ago or Ted Venatoulis 3 weeks ago. And we're doing this under the Baltimore Positive umbrella. I don't know when our next in-person Baltimore Positive will be, but this has certainly rocked everyone's world, right?
It has rocked everyone's world, I'll tell you, on a personal level. And I know folks are dealing with all kinds of stressors in their lives at this point. But on a lighter note, because in this very, very serious time, I said to you, I texted you over the weekend, and it literally has been years where my weekend hasn't been dictated by youth sports games. I mean, with 7 grandchildren, you're running from field to field to field, and to all of a sudden wake up on Saturday morning and look at your calendar, I said to Linda, you and us, we have no games to go to today. It's a very minor thing, but boy, was it symbolic to me of what's going on in the country. And the other thing that's symbolic, Nestor, and I'd be curious as you look out your window, the prettiest view, I always say, in all of Baltimore City, but at about, I don't want to exaggerate it, I want to say 1 or 2 o'clock yesterday afternoon, I just happened to look outside, and it hit me that for the entire day, I had not seen a car go down my street. And I said to Linda, this is the only thing that I can make it analogous to is when we had the double blizzard a few years back and everyone was truly quarantined as a result of the double blizzards for 10 days or so. When you were in your home. This is obviously not a blizzard, far more serious. A blizzard, you know, you're going to get out of, you know, the snow's going to melt. You know, your street's going to be cleaned. And as long as you had milk and toilet paper, you were good to go. This, as you hear people talk now,
put your county executive hat back on for me. And, you know, we had Barry Glassman out last week. But, yeah. I mean, this stresses everyone. But certainly when you have to have that press conference to say that this virus is now in our county, in our area, in our city, in our hospital, in our community, it really does bring up these sort of War of the World movies, right, where lepers, you know what I mean? Like, and I don't think people have really gotten a grip on what's going on in Italy and South Korea and China when the little truck shows up at your house and everybody comes out in the white Willy Wonka suit and they come in. I mean, 60 Minutes made that clear on Sunday night. Well, that's kind of how this rolls.
Boy, there are a couple of questions wrapped in there, right? A couple of things that are happening that we're having trouble even getting our head around here in the United States. Right now, to walk down the streets of Rome, you need to have certified papers that in some way you have emergency business that requires you to be on the street. Police are stopping you if you are on the street, asking you to see that certification. That, you know, we may get there. That's almost unthinkable in the United States of
America. This is unthinkable last week that nobody would be able to go out of their house today.
Well, and part of that, and now, you know, it's impossible, Nestor, and I go back and forth on this. I mean, you see my Facebook feed. You see some of my Republican friends and how they've reacted to this. And I haven't forgotten, by the way. I'm going to come back. This is truly a Baltimore Positive episode, folks, because, as you know, we never, as we say...
Well, what else do we have to do? All we have to do is talk, right? I mean, all we have to do at this point is get to know each other better, literally, right? Read, think, learn. It is a time to stop and think and learn and educate yourself.
Well, see, Nestor, that... Oh, boy. Did you just open a can of worms there? Let's
Well, you were my educator. I always say this. I mean, your tombstone, it'll say great husband, father, leader, but it's going to say educator. That's what you've given your life to, literally.
I'd be very happy if that's on my gravestone. I would feel like I would hope that I would live the life worthy of that. But let's go back to your question about county executive, and I think you can extrapolate that to governor. For folks who say that you and I are unfairly partisan in our criticism of the president, I would encourage them to see what we've both written and what we've said about the response of Governor Hogan and the local county executives to this response. And again, I think that was reflected in...
It's going to save lives in our state. It is, right?
It's saving lives. It's reflected nationwide in the latest NBC News Wall Street Journal poll, which shows that roughly 75% of the people in the United States give very high marks and have confidence in state and local government in responding to this crisis. You asked about a county executive. Again, hard to find anything that's analogous because of the serious health nature of this. But each of the county executives that we've observed, whether it's Johnny or Calvin Ball or Barry Glassman or Stuart Pittman, each and every one of them from day one has been on top of this, both serving as soother-in-chief, trying to say to their folks, this is very challenging, it's very dangerous, but we'll get through it. But here's what you need to know now. The governor has, if you contrast the governor's press conferences with what we've seen from the beginning at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, they couldn't be more different. Right? I mean, the governor, from day one, Governor Hogan, took this seriously. He worked with his local partners. He took his advice of his health experts, and he hasn't been afraid to act. That's what leaders do. That's what people look for. And as a county executive, when you say, what would it be like? There were a number, again, they're not analogous, but serious incidents that took place in my 20 years in county government, both with Jim Smith, Kevin Kamenetz, and then
And you can name them by the incident. Months. You can just say Perry Hall High School, and everyone knows what that represents, right?
You can say Perry Hall High School. You can say the Dundalk water main break. And I remember very, very clearly that Dundalk water main break, where over in your old hometown, where it literally looked like Venice. It was a Friday night. I'll never forget it. I'm in the county executive's office. We're sort of getting ready to wrap up for the weekend, talking about weekend plans, just socializing, reflecting on the week. And I get a call from the editor, from the news editor at WJZ, the assignment editor, and he says, Don, I'm assuming you guys are heading over to Dundalk. And I go, heading over to Dundalk?
I'm going to Cadesville.
He said, you better turn on the TV. And at that point, my phone starts going off at the same time with police and fire calling, saying, Don, you guys need to get to Dundalk right away. And a water main exploded that literally flooded the entire Logan area of Dundalk. It went on for a good 48 to 72 hours. And again, I think back to that response. County Executive Smith gathered all of his emergency managers on that site. It was difficult to get there. But he had his state officials there from MEMA. He had all of the first responders.
All I can think about, Don, is people were counting on you. People I know. People I used to eat cheesesteaks with at Captain Harvey's. You know, how many friends I had in that neighborhood.
Right.
My mom was in, you know, we had situations on Bank Street where the water was out or the electricity was down or, you know, any of those type of things. And, I mean, every time WNST ever went down, I'm beholden to BG&E to get me going. You know, you really are at the mercy of local government. I mean, literally, of local government caring that there's a Don Mohler, a Jim Smith, a Johnny O, a Kevin Kamenetz, whomever it is that cares that you're experiencing. I mean, we talk about Evan Brown all the time in Howard County, right? And what happened there, that people have to care about other people. That's how this works.
And bring me back to Evan and Keith at State Fair sometime in this conversation. We want to talk about what they did yesterday, which is so
take
emblematic.
Kids eat free. I love it.
Of what small businesses doing to pitch in at this time. But I think you're absolutely right, Nestor. People do look to government. And what I say, and you and I have had this discussion many, many times over the years, is that this is a reminder to those folks who want to oversimplify that government is good, government is bad. Because certainly starting back, and I was, I think Ronald Reagan, when history's written, did many, many good things. One of the things that he did that was harmful was he, to help his campaign and to help his supporters, he painted government as the enemy. And that really took a foothold, and it's been sort of the Republican mantra for the past 50 or 60 years that government is the enemy. Well, we're finding out right now that government has a real role, particularly in times of crises, and has to do things that people themselves and the private sector cannot do.
And won't do, because it's not in their economics. They don't understand it. I mean, in the case of this clown running the country, he doesn't understand science. He doesn't believe in science. And 63 million people said, that sounds good to me. And 2 weeks ago, he's bragging about his 401k and calling a pandemic a hoax. It's inconceivable to me. The notion that this guy could still be the president on November the 10th is inconceivable to me, Don.
And right now, I can hear folks in their car, when they're listening to us, our Republican friends are saying, there they go again.
No, you're
there
wrong then. You're wrong. If you're my Republican friends, you're wrong. Yeah. You've always been wrong. You're wrong on this.
And where they're wrong on this, Nestor, where they're wrong on this, and this is where I try to have a discussion with my friends who still sort of hold their nose and support this guy, is that this is a case where he doesn't just test our sensibilities. This is a case where he's just not being outrageous, and we think it's dangerous in terms of rhetoric. This time, what he's done has truly been dangerous and put people at risk. And when people say, well, how is that true? I want to go back to what you just said. You said, go back to the beginning of this crisis a couple of weeks ago, and when he goes to a rally and he starts screaming that it's a hoax, that it's being overstated by the media, again, tapping into that narrative that the media hates you, and Democrats. And what happens then, Nestor, what's really, really dangerous about that, and really, really terrifying, is that that works for his base. And he has put particularly his base at danger with that rhetoric. Again, if you look at the NBC Wall Street Journal poll just came out this past weekend, that the support, the people who think the president has handled this crisis well, 9 out of 10 Republicans. But then go down below that. Are you going to modify your behavior? And an extreme partisan split, with Democrats saying, of course I'm going to modify my behavior. Republicans saying, no, I'm not. Ask people, is it going to get worse? Obviously, Democrats are saying, based on all the health officials, it's going to get worse before it gets better. Republicans are saying, no, I don't think it's going to get worse. The danger of what he's done in each one of his addresses, it fails the test. It fails the leadership test. And that means, I don't care if you were a county councilman, a dog catcher, a county executive, a mayor, a governor, there is a leadership test, and you are tested at times.
I don't think I've ever said I don't take responsibility at all.
Correct.
For anything in my life, not for having a pregnant girlfriend at 15, for buying a business, for the stock market crash in 2009 that almost destroyed me, for my wife's illnesses and battling back, and I don't take responsibility at all.
Well,
how can you ignore something like that and watch this human being berate media as the entire country is shut down? He's a disgrace. He's an American disgrace.
Well, go back to the example of the water main break. And let's assume for a moment that a year or 18 months prior to that, the World Health Organization had come to Jim Smith and said, Mr. Smith, here's what we'd like to do. We think that water and sewer infrastructure issues across the world are a real health and safety issue. And we'd like to help fund repairs, and we're willing to put $1 billion into Baltimore County to help upgrade your water and sewer systems so that that junk isn't flowing into the Chesapeake Bay, so that your water mains aren't exploding, so that your communities aren't being endangered. And Jim Smith had said, no, that's okay. We'll handle it on our own. And then a year later, you have this massive water main break, and you ask Jim Smith, do you accept responsibility? And he said, no, not really. Well, of course he would have said, yes, I should have taken the help. And in this case, facts, as they always say, are stubborn things. So I would say to those who still stand with the president, it's like I said in a post yesterday, look, if you want to vote for this guy in November, go ahead. It's America. I don't understand it. I will never understand it. But go ahead. But at the same time, don't check your sensibility for facts at the door when you're trying to look at how he's handling a crisis. I mean, just this past weekend, Nestor, we saw he holds the press conference. He violates every protocol that Dr. Fauci and others are calling for in terms of social distancing at the press conference. He announces a major initiative by Google that's going to have a website up and running when evidently Google people in their offices are looking at one another and going, does anyone know what he's talking about? And of course the answer is no. So again, misinformation. So what's become really, really dangerous is that we now are at a point in our nation where people cannot trust what the president is saying. Listen, he was told...
I've never trusted what he said, so
he was told years ago.
I'm a rational human being. I think for a living, you know?
He was told years ago that this pandemic was on the horizon, and he ignored it. He did not allow a discussion of it because it did not fit his political narrative. It did not fit his political narrative. That is very, very scary. But even go beyond that. Let's go under that for a minute. Master, you and I talked last week when we did a show. We talked about his first presidential address, which will go down. You know, most historians have already ranked it probably the least effective presidential address, actually harmful in the history of the Republic. I described it to you, as a hostage video. And an address that literally minutes after it was over, the White House had to scramble and correct all of the misstatements in the address. But yet, at its underbelly of all of that, and I thought New York Times columnist David Brooks. Now, David Brooks is a conservative New York Times columnist. He's been a conservative for years. Nobody questions his conservative credentials. And he bottom-lined it this weekend on Meet the Press. He said very simply, let's be honest, let's cut to the chase. We have a president who is incapable of feeling how we're feeling. And I said to folks the other day, and I wrote a little bit about it, is that I've always believed historically, and I've watched enough elected officials in my lifetime to believe that behind every speech, there's an empathic nature of every speech, that along with the words, that what people are looking to hear is whether or not this leader gets me. Does he understand what I'm feeling? It's not unlike that Bill Clinton moment in that early debate with George Bush when they're talking about how much coffee and milk cost, and Clinton comes off the chair and he takes two or three steps towards the questioner. It was a town hall format. And he says, I feel your pain. I know. And Clinton had that, and it drove his opponents crazy. And I get it, because there's a lot that you can dislike about Bill Clinton. But one of the things that he had was the ability to make folks believe that he cared about them. And Donald Trump not only can't do it, he doesn't even have the ability to fake it or mimic it. So therefore, when he reads a speech like he did last week in the Oval Office that is designed to reassure the American people that we'll get through this, but that there are tough times ahead and we've got to all come together, it comes off as very odd, very strange. And of course, as that hot microphone moment shows at the end, when it's over and he sort of rips the microphone off and says, well, there you go, sort of mocking that you all made me do that, the American people are very unnerved by that. Of course, stock market plummeted on that. But here's what we know, and here's what we have to work through on the political side. And again, we're probably spending way too much time on the political side, but along with a public health emergency, it's a political emergency. And what we know is the very dangerous part is we've now even decided that issues of life and death, issues of health and safety, issues of communicable diseases have now become open for partisan debate, and that 40 to 45%, and again, it's reflected in that latest NBC Wall Street Journal poll. I encourage people to go look at it. You can pull it up online anywhere. That 40 to 45% have decided that regardless of what this president says, it has to be correct. And the bulk of them identify when asked who will you trust to get accurate information during this crisis.
Well, there's no question this, Don Mohler joining us here, it's Baltimore Positive and WNST in the middle of this pandemic. There's no question the federal government has failed the citizens of the United States of America, that when you dismantle the wall set up to the CDC and serving our people and understanding pandemics and being on the front end of pandemics, which is crucial. And we only learned that in 1918, right? I mean, we scientists, doctors, the WHO, all these people, and I'm not talking about Pete and Roger, I'm talking about the World Health Organization, they all know what a pandemic is. We learned this with Ebola. We learned this with HIV. They have systems set up for this, but Orange Buffoon Man in the red hat is worried about the latest hate rally in Hershey and the Space Force, for crying out loud. We have a pandemic on our hands here. The federal government is responsible for this, and the people that have allowed this guy to continue to run our country even after he sold us off to the Ukrainians and the Russians. It's an inconceivable outcome, and yet the next 90 days, we're going to have friends and relatives and neighbors die.
Well, Nestor, and again, nobody knows this better than you. You are, as I say, through personal experience, what you and Jen have been through with her being a two-time leukemia supporter, she knows her way around. I'll put it to you this way. We could blindfold you guys, and you'd be able to find your way around Johns Hopkins. I mean, that's how familiar you are.
Well, 6 years ago this week, she was diagnosed on the Thursday of March Madness, and I didn't understand Purell at the front door, mask on. There were times where I slept in a rubber suit to be with her when she was at the bottom of her battle, when she had no immune system at all, and she was literally in a bubble. And people like you and other people, you're out touching people in the county all day long doing the job you do. When I'm in your presence, I would elbow bump you, or elbow bump everyone for a couple of years, 2014, 15, 16. I didn't touch anyone or anybody. I did keep distance. People would move in on me to want to talk to me, and I'd back off and say, I can't have you breathing on me. I don't know where you've been. And people are really offended by that, right? But it's not you. You're with your grandkids. Your grandkids are at school. Who knows? Who knows what you've got? But I've lived my life that way for 6 years. Now the rest of society is going to have to live that way. And based on what I saw on my timeline over the weekend and St. Patrick's Day And, you know, I helped Bob Ehrlich become governor, so I'm going to urinate in his direction. He and his wife were out in Pasadena with their kids crowded around a table making fun of the virus. Basically, there's no coronavirus in Pasadena today. You know, this is on Sunday afternoon when every morning show is telling you, go home, put a mask on, go home.
It's
irresponsible. It's irresponsible. And it makes me make fun of you on the radio. It makes me not want to have a rational discussion with you when you're too foolish to understand the danger you present to yourself, let alone to other people. It's not leadership, Don.
Thinking reasonable people. Listen, we had a small party planned at my daughter's house this past Saturday night for my son-in-law Brian's birthday. It was not friends and neighbors. It was literally their family, Brian's mom and dad and brother, Linda and me, and Jennifer's brother Jeff and his family. You know, early in the morning, Jennifer sends everybody a text and says, "Look, guys, out of an abundance of caution, we're just not going to have the birthday party." That's what people should be doing. Nestor, if people don't
believe... These are small sacrifices to make. I mean, I thought a week ago when Pearl Jam, you know, was canceled, I'm like, oh my God, it's Pearl, you know, I mean, like, that was my first, you know, I'm wearing my Royal Farms shirt at the Royal Farms Arena, of course. I was a little disappointed, you know, I had, you know, whatever you would say. And then the next thing you know, lacrosse is gone, baseball's gone, basketball's gone, the pools are gone, the brackets are gone, opening day is gone. You know, all of this stuff happens. And it really does remind me, one, of 9/11, two, of my wife's illness both times, because you're not prepared for that. You're not prepared for that car wreck. You're not prepared for the day after your mother or father dies. You know, those times in my life where everything in your life stops after a tragedy, a loss, a period of mourning, a period of reflection. After you get sick for a week, there's a couple of days where that are a little dark to you, you know. I want to make sure we don't have any dark days and sickness here. Matter of fact, you know, I'm ramping up for all things on the election. We're talking about moving the election now. My business, what happens to sports. You know, for the last 2.5 years in our Baltimore Positive way, I've been preparing for life after sports. So this does not come as, you know, a real right cross to me that there's no sports for Nestor to talk about on his sports station anymore. I feel like I've evolved a little bit beyond that, that we're going to have much, much more difficult conversations over the next 90 days, and I'm probably going to really piss off a lot of people with some uncomfortable truths, you know?
Well, imagine Nestor, just some of the realities. Let's look at the hospital bed issue in the United States of America and why folks like Governor Cuomo in New York and others, why Vice President Biden last night in the debate is calling on the president to get the United States Army Corps of Engineers involved now in establishing mobile hospitals across the United States. Now, people can roll their eyes if they want, but here are the facts that are uncomfortable. It's estimated that right now there are about 924,000 hospital beds in the United States of America, with 60,000 beds in intensive care. Now, in a moderate pandemic, and we're not in a moderate pandemic, you would need 1 million hospital beds and 200,000 ICU beds. So you'd need roughly three and a half times as many ICU beds as you currently have available, not counting the folks that many of those are 70% and 80% occupied at this point. That in a serious pandemic, and by all nature, I don't think anyone would consider this anything but a serious pandemic, you would need 9.6 million hospital beds and 3 million intensive care beds. Listen, I have a son-in-law who's in the healthcare industry, who works for one of the major hospitals in the area. They are taking this very seriously. They know they are about to be stressed in a way that they are not designed to respond to. So I would say again, and I want to be respectful, because while I can get as angry as the next person at that 40 to 45% of what we'll call, you know, the Trump true believers, that cult of Trump, I would say to them, please back away for a minute. Don't make this about the election. Don't view this as a plot that somehow the deep state is involved in to help take down your man, Donald Trump. That's not what this is about. This is a worldwide pandemic. Nestor, it's terrifying. When we went to bed on Friday night, and I know we don't normally talk date and time on this thing, but it would be it gives you an example of what happens in terms of the numbers. The number of confirmed cases in the United States was just under 2,000. As we wake up on a Monday morning, it's now up to around 4,000. It's not growing by one or two cases a day. That's not the way this virus responds. So that when you see a Governor Cuomo shut down all bars and restaurants in New York City, it's because he knows if we're not able to flatten the curve, this thing will become a crisis, the kind of which we have never seen. You know, many people want to make it analogous to certainly the handling of it, to the mishandling of Hurricane Katrina. But when we look back, Hurricane Katrina was an isolated portion of the United States of America. And you had more of a game plan in terms of how you would respond and how you would rebuild. You indicated we don't have that this time. And part of the reason that we don't have that is that we do have a president who brags, and again, who his supporters are going to get angry that I say this. Again, these are his words, not mine. He brags that he's never read a book. He brags that he doesn't believe in science. He just doesn't believe it. There are reports that the reason that Mick Mulvaney is out as chief of staff is that he was pushing back on the seriousness of the virus, and the president didn't want to hear it. So we have a president who is rejecting all traditional approaches to leadership. This is not about these. It's not about ours. There's not a good guy, bad guy thing here of if you believe in the virus, you're a bad guy. If you don't, you're a good guy. I say to my friends on the right,
if you don't believe in the virus, you're an ignorant buffoon.
Right.
Well, there's nothing else I can call you. I'm from Dundalk High School. You either accept facts and accept science or die on the flat earth side of you're a fool. I'm getting to the point where, you know, I'm really having trouble remaining friends with fools because to some degree you're too ignorant for my own good. You know what I mean? Your ignorance is going to get us killed.
And they are putting folks in danger. Now, amidst all this gloom and doom, Let me bring what I think is a little bit of sunshine into this. I have the benefit of seeing up close and personal how principals, not just high school.
I was going to bring up your daughter in this. I was going to ask you about Dr. Lynch because
right. She
has been truly like her dad, a leader in what are we going to do with our kids, right? Everyone's asking, what are we going to do with our kids, right?
And I think Jennifer would be the first to tell you that she is just one of thousands and thousands of principals and teachers across this nation. I get to watch Jennifer and what she does at her elementary school up close and personal. I get to watch her staff. I've seen her staff. I mean, she had a teacher the other day literally was writing notes to every student and every student's family that she taught, giving them suggestions for this week. As you saw yesterday, my daughter and principals, again, all over Maryland, all over the United States, my daughter is taken to Facebook to read books so that parents can say, hey, Dr. Lynch is reading a book. Come on, let's read this book with Dr. Lynch. So in this darkness, educators are stepping in and saying to moms and dads, this is awful. Your child care has been interrupted. Your education has been interrupted. But we can do things to make it better. That's the American spirit. That's what gives me goosebumps. Then in the midst of that, yesterday, good friends of yours and mine, Evan Brown and Keith Holsey, the owners of State Fair. I'm going through my Facebook feed, and I see a public post by the folks at State Fair who say, we are determined. Now, again, think their business is being decimated by this. So it's not as if they're unaffected, but in the midst of their own business being affected by this, they step up and they post and they say, no child will go hungry in our area as long as we own this restaurant. So that if you have a child who's having trouble getting breakfast or lunch, please bring them to State Fair as long as schools are closed. We will feed them at no charge. Now, sir, I got to tell you, it brought a tear to my eye because I'm thinking, man, there are just good people out here. And that's the kind of sentiment. That's the kind of sentiment that we would love. I've given up hope that it can never happen, but that the president would tap into, as opposed to standing up and making up stories about Google and making up stories that everyone who wants a test can get a test. I mean, again, I go back and I say to his supporters, when the president has said now two or
three times... How many times is he going to lie to you,
before
you call him what he is, a liar, a con man?
Right. I would say to him, how many times... That you phrased it extremely well. Folks, it's not Nestor and Don saying that the president said if you want a test, you may get a test. It's the president. And we know that is not accurate. It, as you said, call it for what it is. That's just a lie. It's not leadership. But what is, again, it was kind of like a broken record. What makes that terrifying is his hold on this 40 to 45% where they then want to dig in and claim, well, of course everybody can get a test. The president said so. Well, guess what? No, they can't. They can't. And you either believe Dr. Fauci, who's worked for, what, 5, 6, 7 presidents, been there 35, 40 years, one of the most respected medical professionals in emergency medicine across the country, or you believe a president who has viewed this through a political prism every single day. And we will get through this. We absolutely will get through this, but it's going to get worse. And that's where I don't think people can think. I think we've passed this, right? I mean, people are going to have to think in terms of it's not going to be weeks. It's not going to be weeks. It's going to be months. I don't have a crystal ball, but I would be shocked.
If they can play baseball in July 4th, if they can play baseball, I'll consider this a win.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's hard for me to imagine.
If that happens, America was spared to some degree, I would say.
And we have phenomenal scientists at NIH.
By the way, I don't think any of us are not going to know someone that doesn't die from this. That's my belief is beginning very soon, we are going to have friends affected by this because this is the way it's worked all over the world. But we think we're immune. We don't have passports here. We don't travel. This is just things that happen to Chinese people in little white suits because that's what it looked like in Willy Wonka suits from 3 weeks ago, these environmental things. Now that it came to 60 Minutes, this week, and now that you can't go out of the house and you have to live on the toilet paper and the pasta that you have in your house, I just think people are not really, they weren't taking this seriously. I still see plenty of people that aren't taking this seriously, and the virus doesn't really care who you voted for. It really doesn't.
Well, again, I could not agree more, and I think it's a time, and now folks are beginning to write and bring it up. It's a time also to understand how really, really difficult social isolation can be. And we can't go, I mean, I think we feel helpless. I mean, you see folks saying you feel helpless because you can't go. Let's take Nestor. If your mom were still living and she was as medically fragile as she was the last few years of her life, and you couldn't go check on her, that would simply be adding both stress to your life and to her life, but you wouldn't be able to go check on her. That's happening all across this country. So I think what
I said to my wife, if one of us gets it, I have to go live at the radio station and you have to battle alone.
Correct.
Alone in your house, in your home, and the whole building would be on lockdown because we wouldn't be able to get off on lobby. Like, that's the kind of quarantine we're talking about. We're talking about what my wife went through, but 100,000 people going through it from their home or their hospital. I mean, you could really go into a rabbit hole with how bad this could get. The reason we're all staying home today is so that it doesn't get that bad. And that if it doesn't get that bad, people are going to come out in July and say it was an overreaction by the libtards, right? I mean,
You know what? And Nestor, I'll take that. You know, I will take that. It's interesting that you raise that point. Again, it's the Baltimore positive. We never go in a straight line thing. Is I thought that if indeed somehow by some miracle, I can't even envision this happening, but by May the 1st, this thing had dissipated to a point where we could pretty much get back to life as we knew it, and the medical experts in the country were making progress towards vaccines and treatments. I will take the all of the 45%, the Sean Hannitys, for example, who will be out in force saying, "See, I told you so." You know what? I'll let them say that. I can't imagine that that's what's going to happen. Certainly the medical experts do not believe that that's what's going to happen, but I would take it. Now, you know, you and I are often critical of Fox News. I do have to give a shout out to, and again, I haven't seen it, but I've read about it, that Tucker Carlson has stood up at Fox News.
I'm not interested in that ass clown.
Yeah.
I mean,
But the fact, listen, you got to give credit where credit is due. It's if somebody's going to stand up and say, look,
lying to you for 10 years and now I'm telling you the truth.
This isn't a hoax and these other guys are wrong. Listen, I'll take little victories where I can get them, right? I'll take little victories where I can get them. Now, you talked about the election. Maryland, like other states, going to have a decision to make. You and I are very, very involved. We were looking to have a mayoral forum on April the 14th. Obviously, we'll be making a decision on that as we move forward. The election itself, with early votes starting April 16th,